Welcome to the Ever Celine podcast, the show that ignites your passion for leadership and empowers you to develop a culture of continuous improvement. I'm your host, Matt Sims, and in each episode, we bring you fascinating insights and invaluable tips from our incredible lineup of guests. What do they all have in common? They share an unwavering dedication to excellence and are the experts in driving engagement, improving metrics, and reducing costs.
The Ever So Lean podcast with Matt Sims. You know it makes sense.
This episode is sponsored by Catalyst Consulting Limited. Catalyst Consulting exists to help people and organisations work better today and be ready for tomorrow. They have a rich history of igniting business transformation using business agility, lean, Six Sigma, strategy deployment, agile and change management. They can help you and your organisation to develop the skills necessary to work and manage differently. To find out more, check out catalystconsulting.co.uk. Today, we have the privilege of hosting a maestro of the airwaves here on the Ever Celine podcast, Paul Chandler, director at Fix Radio. As we embark on this journey through the vibrant world of radio, let's rewind the dial for just a minute and uncover the captivating tale of Fix Radio's ascent to greatness. Imagine a station that doesn't just broadcast music, but serves as a beacon of inspiration and information for UK tradespeople. Fix Radio, founded by the visionary Louis Timpany, emerged onto the scene in 2017 with the resounding declaration of "We're nailing it." And since then, it's been hammering away at the status quo, carving out a niche that is trades-focused content and infectious energy. But the road to success wasn't smooth sailing. It's been a wild ride filled with challenges and obstacles that would have deterred the faint-hearted. From humble beginnings to national acclaim, Fix Radio faced the daunting task of penetrating a fiercely competitive market dominated by giants such as the BBC, Global and Bauer. Yet armed with belief in their mission and fueled by passion, they've conquered every hurdle in their path. Fast forward to today, and Fix Radio stands tall as a national digital radio station broadcasting across the UK via DAB digital radio, online platforms and mobile devices. With an impressive array of accolades under its belt, including the Silver Award at the 2023 UK Audio and Radio Industry Awards, Fix Radio has become synonymous in the trades and the radio industry alike. And who better to unravel the mysteries behind Fix Radio's meteoric rise than Paul Chandler himself? With over three decades of experience in the radio industry, Paul is not just a seasoned veteran, but also an acclaimed author. His publications include Essential Radio Journalism, Professional Media Practice, and Basic Radio Journalism, both co-authored with Peter Stewart, and Hang the DJ, The Radio Presenter's Guide to Law, co-authored with Paul Hollins. And let's not forget Twible, which he co-authored with Simon Bates, a guide to libel for Facebookers, bloggers, and tweeters, all of which have become essential reading for aspiring broadcasters worldwide. So prepare to be enthralled as we delve into the story of David and Goliath, of passion, relentless hard work, of incredible leadership, the triumphs, the trials of Fix Radio's journey. Paul, welcome to the Ever Celine podcast.
It's a great pleasure to be with you, Matt. Thank you for inviting me.
I am over the moon that you agreed to come on. I really am. I never in a million years thought I would be speaking to somebody like yourself.
Well, that's very sweet to say. Thank you very much.
It's mad. Like, things have happened so quickly with this podcast in particular. And a year ago, if you'd have said to me, you'll be sitting down with Paul, I'd have been like, no chance.
Yeah, congratulations on the growth of the podcast as well. It's very worthwhile.
Thank you very much. It's pennies compared to what you're doing, though. I mean, it's incredible. I've followed your journey on social media since you started, actually, with Fix Radio in particular, and I've just found it inspiring. I really have. It's really driven me on, and I'm sure many others as well. It's absolutely brilliant. Tell us a little bit about you, then. Let's tell us your career highlights there, because you've had a wonderful career.
Well, yeah, and it is four decades, not three decades.
Is it?
It's my 40th year this year in professional radio. I started as a local newspaper journalist in Kent. Before that, I joined my hospital radio station in Tunbridge Wells when I was 13. And so I became a sort of a DJ journalist and learned some of the basics there. I couldn't get a job at the BBC because I didn't go to university and they wouldn't give me a job.
Really?
In journalism. You know, I just didn't make it. So I did the next best thing, which was when I left school at 18, joined the local paper. And I learned all of the basics of journalism, shorthand, public administration, the law. And I worked in local newspapers in Kent for about 6 years until the launch of the first commercial radio station in Kent called Invicta Radio in 1984. And I joined that radio station as a journalist and a newsreader. And I also got given one show a week on a Sunday morning called Sunday Supplement, which I presented, which I love doing because I love doing both the DJing and the journalism combined. After a while being a journalist, someone went on holiday and they were looking around for a sort of stand-in presenter. And I said, OK, look, I'm going to take 2 weeks holiday as well and I'll do the show for free. And they said, well, you know, it's commercial radio. Of course, yes, we can save some money. So I did the show for free. And within 3 months, I'd been given the show permanently and I became a presenter rather than a journalist. And I loved doing it because every day I had at least two interviewees live in the studio. A lot of celebrities came through, Norman Wisdom. I'm trying to think, all the people, Ben Elton, people like that who were appearing locally.
Brilliant.
And I was just able to interview those people as well as local people, all mixed together with music. And so I could combine the two things. I even did all of the roadshow stuff. Like every summer, Invicta did a series called Paul at Large, ha ha ha, because of my size. And they used to let me go to different resorts and recreation grounds around Kent, and we'd do a live broadcast, very similar to the Radio 1 roadshow, except there weren't as many people. we did all that kind of thing. And I loved doing the DJ stuff and the club nights and the roadshows and just being a DJ. So, yeah, I did that for 4 years. Then I moved to Brighton and went back into journalism and was the news editor for Eastbourne, which is where I still live. And then I got offered a job with the BBC at last, and they wanted me to present a breakfast show in Wiltshire. And I moved down to Wiltshire and did the show for about 8 or 9 months. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Once again, it combined doing live DJing with interviewing people in the news. And I had a thoroughly good time there. I was very spoiled, as people at the BBC were then as presenters. You know, everything was done for you. You go in the morning, there's a nice cup of tea waiting for you, a pile of tapes ready for you to play out, a list of interviewees. And, you know, you'd have a reporter at your disposal to send off onto the day's news story. There'd be someone to do your traffic and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And I enjoyed that for a while. But then it was sort of got into the 1990s and I decided I wanted to go more into management. And so I was offered a job as a head of news for the Chiltern Radio Network. Within a year or two, Paul Robinson, who was the program director, had left to join Radio 1 as their number three, I think, in the organisation. And I basically took over from him as programme director and ran the Hot FM for about 6 years before moving to Essex Radio in 1995 and then eventually ending up at the Wireless Group where I was in charge of Talk Sport and all of their local stations. I had about 18 stations. During the 90s, when I was at Chiltern, we were lucky enough to launch a new regional dance music station called Galaxy. And I was part of the team responsible for launching that. And that was in Bristol and South Wales. And I moved out of Bristol and worked out of that office as both the group program director and as the managing director of Galaxy. And then when I worked at Essex Radio in about 1997, we successfully applied for the regional license for East Anglia. And we also turned that into a dance music station called Vibe. And now both of those stations are Kisses. They were both incredibly fun to run, especially Vibe and Essex FM itself. And I had a great time. Since 2001, I've been a consultant. I've worked all over Europe.
And I've been working with managements to improve their audiences, working with DJs to help them be better presenters, and working with journalists to help them write better and stuff like that. I've also, during the time I've been a consultant, I've been lucky enough to be an interim manager. That's where a company asks you to look after a radio station for a few months while they recruit someone new. I was able to do that at Hallam FM in Sheffield and at Met Rural Radio in Newcastle. And I thoroughly enjoyed my time there. I had a great time, and I was effectively the program. Well, I was the program director in those stations, working for EMAP at the time. It's now Bauer, and I got to love the Sheffield and Newcastle while I was working there.
You've quite literally lived my dream, Paul. It's remarkable.
Well, I've never had a podcast, so you're living yours.
I don't know about that. You've kind of eclipsed me just ever so slightly with that one. But radio has changed, I think, to some degree, because when you look at particularly the national stations now, most of the presenters and the DJs tend to be people that are already in show business, people that have come from other TV shows, maybe, or even from reality TV shows. What do you make of that?
It obviously depends on the celeb, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with taking someone who hasn't grown up in radio and teaching them how to do radio, as long as you do it well and as long as they're receptive to it. And what these people bring is an audience which may not be listening to radio. And of course, they bring some PR to a radio station, and then they bring some showbiz shine to it. I can't claim the credit for this, but when I was at Chiltern Radio, in every studio, we had about 8 studios dotted all over the place. Dunstable, Northampton, Gloucestershire, Bristol. Next to the clock in the studio, there was always a big sign which had been created by the founder of Chiltern Radio, Colin Mason. And I've always remembered it. And it said, and it was a message to the DJs, "This is showbiz, be an entertainer." And that's very good. And in some of the ventures I'm involved with, which I know we're going to talk about later, that sign, I've had that sign put in the studios too. And I think it's a really good reminder of what,
brilliant,
of what we're about.
Yeah.
You know, whether we're already, whether someone's already a celebrity or whether they're just a radio person. It all comes out the same box, you know, all comes out the same speaker.
You've inspired me, Paul. I'm going to get that sign in my studio.
There you go.
I like the idea of that. It's really good.
Spreading the word.
But it is, and I say this to my wife quite often, because I'll go downstairs after a day sitting in the dark room talking to myself all day. And I'll go downstairs and I'm physically and mentally exhausted. And she says to me, "You've only been sitting up there recording podcasts. It's not exactly exhausting." I'm like, "But it is. It takes it out of you." Like,
Yeah.
Because you are on performance mode the
exactly.
whole time.
Exactly. You're quite right. Get it.
You need to tell her for me. So tell us a bit about how you got involved in Fix Radio then, because the story of Fix Radio is amazing.
So what happened was Fix Radio exists because of another radio station called Premier Christian Radio. And Premier is a national station, has existed for many years now, 20 years plus. And I'd been hired to do some consultancy work there over a number of years. And I used to go into Premier in Victoria. They have studios in Victoria Station, and work there, working with DJ, working with the presenters and journalists and management. And one day, one of the bosses there said, "Look, we've got a new sales guy and we need you to spend some time telling him about how we program the radio station and what we do and how it all works." And I said, "Okay, what's his name?" And I was told his name is Louis Timpany, which I thought sounded very French Regency. Louis Timpany. I remember the meeting really well because we were in conference room 2 at Premier Towers. In Chapter Street in Victoria, and I met Louis, and he was virtually, I think he was 22 and he'd just come from uni, and we talked about Premier, and at the end of the conversation he said, "I know you're a consultant," he said, "I've got an idea for a radio station." And I said, my eyes silently rolled heavenwards because I, as a consultant, you get a lot of people coming up to you saying, "I've got an idea for a radio station." And usually it's, either crap or, you know, it's not viable or it wouldn't work and stuff.
I've got an idea, Paul.
And so Louis said, I've got an idea for a radio station. And he said, look, I've just come from Leeds Uni and I was studying there. And after uni finished, I did some work to earn some extra cash on various building sites. And I noticed that the builders all listened to radio for the whole day. And this rang a bell with me because I had just had a new bathroom installed in my house. And the workman who did it, the first tool out of their van in the morning was the radio. And the last tool back at night was the radio. And they listened to Radio 2 all day. And so I said, oh, well, that's really interesting because I've had this experience. You've had that experience. And he said, yeah, why, you know, I'd like to start a radio station for builders. And I would stress that it's always been Louis' idea. You know, I've helped him open doors and assisted him and sped things up a bit because of my knowledge of the industry. But I always acknowledged that it was Louis' idea to set up a radio station for builders. And I said, okay, well, we need to, you know, do some research on this. And luckily, Louis' dad gave us some money to do some proper research as to whether or not there might be a market for a builder's radio station. And if there was, would advertisers advertise on it? And so we did this research, and although it wasn't definitive by any means, it just gave us some confidence that it was a worthwhile thing to pursue. And I'd never heard of a builder's radio station before. In fact, I hadn't heard of a radio station that appeal to a particular niche in the way that fixed radio does. And so we worked on it for a year. And I remember he was working full-time at Premier and I was working part-time as the consultant. And I often remember that we had these surreptitious meetings at lunchtime where I would phone his extension on the other side of the room and let it ring twice. And that would be the signal for him to go out and go to the pub. And I would leave it 5 minutes and then go and join him. And we would plan out the details of launching Fix. And, you know, Louis is always kind enough to acknowledge, in the same way that I acknowledge it was Louis' idea, he's always very kind enough to acknowledge that I was the guy who helped him into radio because he knew nothing really about radio and how it worked. And there was so much to do, and the least of which was trying to organise, you know, the transmission distribution. And we wanted to do it in London. And I had various contacts who could provide us with DAB coverage in London. So we managed to get a contract together. I think the most challenging thing was raising the money to do it and trying to persuade people to do it, to finance it. And I always remember when we went to two investors, potential investors. One was a friend of mine who was reasonably wealthy, quite a young guy, and I managed to persuade him to put him and his father and his brother put in about 25 grand between them. And I also organised a meeting with Mark Goodyear of Wise Buddha, Mark Goodyear, the former Radio 1 DJ. And Louis and I went to that meeting, I remember it now, in the basement of Wise Buddha in Great Titchfield Street. And we persuaded Mark to become an investor. So my friend and Mark were our two first investors. And I remember when my friend's money landed in our bank account, having done the deal, what a moment that was for us, because it sort of gave us the confidence to know that if someone else believed in our idea. And we felt very responsible having that 25K in the bank. And it being someone else's money that we had to spend wisely. But it was I always tell people this, especially people trying to get money together for a radio station. It is very, very difficult. It's a real long slog. And especially when you have I hate using the word product in relation to radio stations, but when you have a product like Fix Radio as an idea to try and persuade people that that's going to be successful. And so it was an uphill struggle for us, but we managed it in the end. And it took us about 9 to 12 months. And we managed to find a studio accommodation with a couple of other radio stations in Battersea. And we launched the station in 2017.
It's remarkable. With any new venture, I always think the power of networking. So, you know, all times, the power of networking for even if you're not for right now, but in the future, knowing people, building those connections, it's such an important thing to do.
You know, I was lucky enough, having been around for quite a few years in the radio industry, to have a lot of connections and people I didn't know. Usually I could find someone in my network who knew them, yeah. And I could make an introduction could happen. And that's what Louis didn't have. So I was able to contribute that in the very early days of Fix prior to launch. And I'm convinced Louis would have made it happen. In any case, it just would have taken him a much, much longer time. And I was able to sort of speed that process up because I knew a lot of people and could organise meetings and open doors in a way that he, if he'd just been a 22-year-old kid saying, I want to start a radio station, he wouldn't have been able to do it like that. It was fun, looking back on it. It was tough, really, really tough. We tend to forget how tough it was.
I've worked within industries where it's quite warehouse-based and has music playing, right? Always do. And it got to the stage where I was analysing the productivity, and I found that it depended on what type of music station was playing, it impacted. So if you had sort of Magic playing, it was all mellow and relaxed, rates would drop. If you put on some sort of dance station like Capital Dance or something, the rates would go up because people work to the beat.
But in the early days of launching Fix, in our first year or so, year and a half, 2 years, we just focused on playing rock-based guitar music with a bit of dance. But the criteria was always that stuff had to be A, familiar, B, upbeat. And that's we've adapted that over the years. But that was the original thing. Our original ambition, well, it was my ambition. Louis had a much greater vision for this than I did. And that's part of his what he brings and why he's so good. But my ambition was to get a radio station on the air that provided an accompaniment to work, with DJs just introducing guitar-based music and putting a bit of construction news out on the air and giving it a flavour of being a builder station. But Louis had a much loftier, better vision of where Fix could be. And it's very much now where he thought it would be, you know, when we first launched. And the key to that is authenticity. When we first launched, we hired DJs that weren't builders and asked them to present a program to builders. And that worked well to a certain extent. It certainly got us off the ground. But we then realized that in order to make a breakthrough, we needed to be more authentic in the way that we sounded. And I won't go through the whole story, but what happened is about 3 or 4 years ago, we found these guys called The Ball Builders who were doing a YouTube channel and being very active on social media and had a big following. And to cut the long story short, we hired them and we've given them lots of training to make them sound like a radio presenter would. So we've taken the authentic builders, and these guys, Brad and Sam, are gore blimey.
Couple of geezers.
All right, builders. Couple of geezers. With the humour and everything, which is everything we wanted. But they didn't know how to do radio. And so similar to what I was talking about with the celebrities and stuff, we took what they were able to offer and then made them much more radio friendly. And that worked. It took a lot of work, but it worked. We've given them a lot of production support. They have two producers. And originally they started doing one show a week on a Friday. And then it got to a point when we thought they were ready to do the Daily Breakfast Show.
Wow.
And we put them on breakfasts. And, you know, what they're able to do is they're able to bring the gritty humour, the knowledge of building work and building sites to the radio audience and make the radio station not only more authentic, but much more relatable. And, you know, we've been very pleased by their progress. We had to teach them all sorts of things about radio, for example, what words they could use and what words they couldn't use.
Yeah, I was going to say, I could imagine that was an issue.
And there was a great video online, I don't know if it still exists online, where I teach them some of the words that they can't say from Ofcom. You know, Ofcom have a list of words that you can't say on the radio, and I go through those, and they are in stitches on the floor as I read out this list. But, you know, it's taken a while, but they are very, very talented, naturally funny, naturally gifted broadcasters, and we love having them on the radio station. And they are good geezers, as you said. Geezers is the word.
They're brilliant.
And they complement each other very well and so on. What we then did, again, in the pursuit of authenticity, is we wanted to create a strand of specialist shows. And so once again, we went to YouTube and found, you know, I'm telescoping this. It took us months to do this, but we found a group of people who were doing YouTube channels. One was a carpenter, another one was a plasterer, another one was a decorator, a plumber. And we asked them to present specialist shows on fixed radio. And again, we worked with them to turn them into radio presenters. We gave them a lot of production help. And although it didn't succeed in every single case, most of the cases, they became very proficient at radio. And what they've been, you know, it's bringing these speciality people, you know, the plumber and the decorator, and giving them their own show and putting them on fixed radio. And not only has that been good for our authenticity, it's also been good for us financially, because we've been able to get those shows sponsored by different sponsors.
I thought you was going to say that when you had the dance playing, that all the brickies were ringing up saying, you need to put some slower music on. We're doing the job in half the time. It's costing us money. Stop doing it.
There has been that suggestion before, believe me. Certainly, the strand of specialist shows that we have on the radio station at the moment are very lucrative. And so what we do is these days is a combo. We do the fun and the laughter and the banter and the jokes and stuff like any other breakfast show would, playing lots of music. We have an hour's worth of music followed by a specialist show. Sean, who's our very talented program director, is always constantly looking at ways of optimizing what we do and making it more entertaining and engaging for the audience.
I do think that relatability piece that you touched on before is so important. And what you've done, so clever, the fact that you've got someone who understands the job that the people that are listening is doing. They know the pitfalls, they know the hard times, they know the good times, they know the challenges they face. When you listen to that on site, you just feel that connection.
Absolutely.
Because you just know they
absolutely
get it.
Absolutely. And that's what we were trying to achieve. And, you know, Louis had that vision in a way, in a sense that I didn't. I was far, far more short term than him. I just wanted to get a radio station on the air that appealed to builders. And his vision was to actually create more authenticity. And he had the vision of scale as well. He didn't just want it sort of peppered into the output. He wanted to have, you know, the ball builders on breakfast and the specialist shows. And we've been able to achieve that. And it's been very lucrative for us in terms of sponsorship and advertising. And I think in terms of its appeal to the audience, as you correctly say, it makes what we do far more relatable and authentic. Mm. That's what we wanted to achieve.
It gives that credibility, doesn't
credibility,
it?
Credibility, you're right, yeah.
When I was, this is a few years ago now, I wrote to one of the senior HR folk and I said, I've got an idea. Let's create on radio. It could be a global phenomenon that we broadcast over the internet. Every site, there's 800 odd sites, they all listen to it. We could do birthday shout outs.
Absolutely.
We could praise people for the things they achieve. It never went, they didn't want to do it. It didn't go anywhere.
Are you ready to elevate your team's ways of working? Are you seeking fresh insights and growth opportunities? Our experts will assess your team's practices, providing valuable insights for improvement and celebration. Reward and recognize your team with this certification tailored specifically for creating an improvement culture. The BQF Academy accreditation acknowledges your journey, outstanding outcomes, and future plans. Whether you utilize Lean, Six Sigma, project management, or continuous improvement techniques, this certification celebrates your incredible work and positive impact. Propel your team's performance to new heights with the BQF Team Excellence Culture Certification. Visit www.bqf.org.uk today and let's celebrate your success together.
13-time Shingo Prize winner Dr. Jeffrey Liker and Toyota Kata author Mike Rother have created the Improvement Kata and Coaching Kata online course. This inexpensive, compact program is designed to transform your thinking and approach, making you a highly skilled learner and coach. Engage in deliberate practice to turbocharge your progress. You also get lifetime access to the materials, including all of the bonus interviews. Why pay up to 10 times the price elsewhere, listening to some consultant, when you can gain direct insights from the masters themselves? Skip the rest and go with the best. Join us today and embark on your journey to excellence. Just click on the link below to start your journey.
It's really interesting because, you know, in the 70s, there was a radio station called UBN, which was United Biscuit Network. And it's the place where people like Graham Dean and other famous broadcasters started. A lot of the original Capital Radio DJs started there, Roger Scott. Oh. And this was based at the United Biscuits factory in North London. And it did exactly what you've described, which is to play music for the workforce while they were working. I don't know why more companies don't do that, because it really is...
It's such a great engagement tool with your people. It's just, and also, similar to what you've done with the Ball Builders, for example, it's a development opportunity for people that work within the organisation. They can come on shows, they could host shows, they could produce shows, teaching people new skills.
Yeah, I always say that you've heard me use the word several times during this chat, visionary vision is important. And I think there's a limit to the kind of vision that a lot of corporations have. Mm. And I think that's sad, really, because I think they ought to open their minds to a lot more.
You hear it a lot when you go to, like, if I go to the service station at the top of my road, they've got Spar FM that plays in there, and some of them have got their own sound, haven't they?
There's a radio group based out of just outside Reading in Berkshire, and its name escapes me for the moment. It was set up by Bruno Brooks, the former Radio 1 DJ.
He was brilliant.
He is brilliant. And he set up this radio station, just set up this company just to provide both in-store radio for customers and behind-the-scenes radio for workers. And that, although Bruno isn't involved these days, it's still, the company still exists and I think is doing very well.
Such a good idea. So let's go back to those sponsorships that you were talking about. You've got some massive names that now sponsor shows. So the one that springs to mind is TradePoint, sponsoring the Ball Builders Breakfast Show.
Yes.
How did you go about getting those kind of sponsors to buy into the vision?
It's very difficult, Matt. I'm not going to shy away from the fact that you can't just roll up and say, look, here's our radio station. Why don't you spend money on it? It takes a lot of effort. You know, Louis is a brilliant, brilliant salesman. Apart from being a great CEO, he knows how to sell. And a lot of the original work to bring in sponsors and advertisers was done personally by Louis, going out there, grabbing the money, convincing people. And we've been lucky enough over the last 3 or 4 years to build up our sales team. And in the last 12 months, we've recruited people from Bauer, pretty high level people from Bauer, in order to get into the agencies and other advertisers to drag money in that way. And once you get one of these big names, others follow. But it's not what I do, it's what Louis does. And it's building relationships over a period of time. We have another sales guy who's been with us since day one called Andy. And Andy is a young guy. And when he first came to us, he didn't have much experience in terms of the building trade or sales. But Louis and he are the people who've gone out there and dragged that money through the door. It's tough. It's like raising money to put the radio station on the air, then raising money to bring in advertisers and sponsors. It is not an easy process. We've had lots of setbacks. You know, there's things that we wanted to do in the past around the sort of 3, 4, 5 year mark, which we weren't able to do because we didn't have the money to do it. And we had to cut back and all that kind of stuff.
How did COVID impact the business plan? Because that's kind of fallen right in the middle of the tenure so far, hasn't it?
Well, in a sense, it helped us out because it meant that we didn't have to spend money on studios because everything moved back into presenters working from home. And we were able to keep going throughout COVID and so on. And the building industry, in a way, wasn't as impacted by COVID as other industries were. And people were spending, I won't say just as much, but were spending in a way they weren't with other sectors. And, you know, we've often found that the building trade is very resilient and they will pay when other sectors, when other advertising areas are not supportive of advertising on the radio. We found that the building trade understand what we want to do. They understand our mission and they just want pairs of ears. Mm. You know, they're not, the reason they don't advertise on Smooth or Magic or Kiss or Capital, well, some of them do, of course, but the reason they like us is that they can advertise on our radio station and know they're reaching 450,000 or so builders specifically, and there's no wastage to their advertising. If they advertise on some of the mainstream radio stations, some of the money they spend is wasted a little bit because they're talking to people who aren't in the building trade. And so we have become their trusted route to market. And that, again, is what Louis wanted to do. He wanted to create not only the radio station, but also a brand, trusted brand. And, you know, we've been very lucky over the past few years in experimenting and hiring people who've been excellent at creating our Instagram channels and our YouTube channels, our podcasts, all of which add to what we can offer to advertisers and sponsors. And that's been a big part of why we've been successful. We're on course to take £5 million this year.
Wow.
And we are profitable. So
that's incredible.
A lot of people, when we started, and this gives me great pleasure to say, a lot of people laughed at what we're doing. You know, oh, a radio station builders. Ha ha, you're never going to make that work. Ha ha, I remember a very senior person in the radio industry who really poo-pooed our idea and said it will never work, blah, blah, blah. And there were other people, by the way, who did believe it would work. But this particular person said it would never work, blah, blah, blah. And we've proved them wrong.
Yeah.
Very much have we proved them wrong.
It's incredible. That happens a lot. You watch interviews with Jeff Bezos from 1994 where he talks about what he's doing and he looks like this geeky little guy and everyone's like, oh, that's ridiculous. Same with Elon Musk. You just look at them and you think, these are visionary people, and Louis sounds just like that.
And there's a famous photograph of Jeff Bezos in the early days of Amazon.com.
In his garage.
In his garage with a trestle table.
Yeah, do you know what that table is? That table is his door. So it's a door on its side.
That's right. Yeah.
It's amazing.
It is amazing.
He's still got it.
It just shows what you can do with a bit of vision and a bit of...
You need these people.
You need these people.
One thing I was going to ask, Paul, is about, you mentioned Louis being 22 at the time, wasn't it, when he first met you?
Yes.
And this is probably a lot of the listeners listening now have probably experienced this as well. I was a young leader. I always felt like conversations were so much harder because I was younger. I found that I didn't have the credibility initially. I had to earn it. Was that a problem for Louis?
In a little bit, but, you know, the thing about Louis is that he doesn't look 22.
Right.
And he certainly doesn't sound as though he's 22. He's got a deep voice and he, you know, he talks the talk. And so a lot of people assumed he was older than he actually was. And were very surprised to learn. I remember going to Global Radio HQ for a radio center event where Louis did a presentation all about Fix. It was in our first year or 18 months. And when I told people, you know, how old he actually was, they just couldn't believe it, you know. So it has been, but he's hired a lot of young people as well. You know, a lot of the younger people who were involved in Fix, especially on the sales side, were around his age because they were hungry for success and stuff like that, and they bought into our vision. And our presenters, you know, for a while I was the actual program director. I'm not now, I'm a director as opposed to a director of the company as opposed to the program director. But I worked for about a year or so as a program director. And, you know, I was able to be the yin to his yang sort of thing. You know, I was able to be the heavyweight in more ways than one. than Louis. And so,
but it sounds like a perfect partnership.
Looking back on it, yes, I think it is. We do have rows about various things. I'll tell you the one that was most contentious, and you know, unfortunately Louis was right on this one, where when we were thinking about the jingles that we use, and we still use to this day, I wanted to have conventional radio jingles sung by conventional. We decided on song jingle. Say Fix Radio, sung by a choir, you know, on a jingle company. And Louis said, no, I want it sounding far more masculine and you know, tough. And I said, oh, I'm not sure if that's going to work. And so he actually said he recruited about a dozen of his mates one weekend, and they went into Wise Buddha, who were making our jingles, which is Mark Goodyear's company, and they recorded these Fix Radio we still use those jingles today. And he was right, because they added what you always have to do when you're building a radio station is you have to think of what's distinctive. And they made us sound very distinctive, like it or hate it. And so I was a bit annoyed that we went down that road. But he, in retrospect, he was right.
But it's authentic.
And there have been other battles, which I won't go into, which I...
Oh, you've teased us now, yeah, Paul. No, you can't do that.
No. Do you want to talk about the expansion of the brand?
Yeah. That's exactly what I want to talk about. Tell us about that.
Interestingly, now Fix Radio has developed into a brand of its own. And one of our next stages is to use that brand in other ways. So, for example, this week, today, in fact, we have launched Fix Radio Protect, which is an insurance policy made specially for tradespeople. Which is backed by a big insurance company, and they do all the stuff for it. And we market it under the name Fix Radio Protect. And we hope that's going to be successful. And we see there are a lot of other opportunities in the building trade construction area where we can use the name Fix Radio to add authenticity and build credibility to anything that we offer. The other thing I wanted to mention just on the early days is a lot of people ask us, how do we get the word out? You know, how did we promote the radio station? And we came up with an idea, which is an old idea, which is an idea that I've used in the past, where you give away stuff for free. And so we decided, what is it the builders would like for free if we don't? And the answer was bacon butties. And so we created the Fix Radio Bacon Butty Tour. And luckily, when we were based in Battersea, there was a little greasy spoon cafe called the Corner Cafe just down the road from us. And we hired them to make hundreds of bacon butties every morning, which would be picked up. And we would have a couple of vans, which were all branded. And we would take them around to building sites in London and get builders to retune their radio in return for a bacon butty.
I remember this. This is awesome.
And it worked very, very well.
Yeah.
And we still do similar things. We're now a national radio station. We became a national station nearly 2 years ago. And although we can't do it quite the scale that we used to do in London, we did still do it. We've still got our fleet of vans that go out and we deliver sausage rolls and stuff like that. Food is great to give away.
Yeah.
Builders love it.
I was going to say, it's the way to anyone's heart. When I was at a company previously, we wanted to encourage shop floor workers to put ideas forward. You know, they do the job every day. How could we improve and get the productivity higher? And we wanted to offer an incentive. So what I did is I basically said, we'll have the ideas come in. The sites that get the most ideas in, I will send down a food van for the day parked up outside, and it's free food for all three shifts. And we had loads coming in because people wanted the burger van.
People love it. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So we hit upon a good idea there, which really worked and helped spread the word.
Such a great way of doing it. What you've done as well, although you've kept like the authentic feel of the building trades, you've kind of changed that stereotype as well for what builders are. I mean, the ball builders are a great example. They've kept that authentic style, but you're seeing a different side of them. I mean, I'm not a builder, but I listen to Fix Radio because I enjoy the content. I like hearing it.
We get a lot of people like that who do enjoy the banter and enjoy the humour. And yeah, I mind you, I would disagree with you slightly. I would say that the baldies are stereotypical builders. And, you know, they're cheerful and they're funny and they have a great chemistry on air and off air.
Yeah.
And people do love them. And they become part of people's morning routine very, very quickly. And we're always worried that their accents are a little bit too southern. And bear in mind, we're a national station now. But we've done some research on that and it doesn't appear to matter. People still like what they hear.
having done the roles you've done, you've probably received plenty of these in your time, but I send out demos, and one of the pieces of feedback I had once was, you sound too stereotypical for South London. You need to lose your accent. And I was like, but that's me.
You can't do that. You've got to remove, it comes back to that word authenticity. You've got to be authentic. If you try and be something you're not, it rarely works. The best presenters nationally are the same off air as they are on air, and they don't try and change. And that's good. I think that's exactly what it should be. That's what personality radio is about. And I very much believe in personality radio. And luckily with Fix Radio, we have personality radio above every, alongside everything else, along the niche target and alongside the authenticity of what we do and stuff. It is personality radio. Even those specialist presenters, the shows are now double-headed because we thought that they sounded a little bit dry when they were just presented by one guy. So we now have each of our specialist shows are presented by teams of two. And that chemistry, works very, very well. Because that's how real life works.
Yeah.
And it's capturing that and putting it in a bottle and then feeding it into a transmitter and letting people hear it. That's important.
Well, you feel like you know them then when they're bouncing off of each other. You feel like you're part of the conversation when you're listening. It's good fun.
It's always, I was always taught that when you want to put personality radio into place, what you have to do is you have to drop little nuggets of information about your life into your program. So people build up an image of what you are. One of my radio stations of choice other than Fix is LBC. And you only have to listen to Nick Ferrari in the morning, who, by the way, has written the foreword to my new book.
Just slip that in there, Paul.
Nick Ferrari, although he's a news presenter, and what I think he would probably regard as a compliment of me saying he's a hairy-arsed veteran journalist, he drops little hints about his family or where he lives or what he does and what he does at the weekend into the conversation. So he's not just this faceless journalist guy. He becomes a personality. And that's really, really important in music radio, in speech radio and on Fix Radio.
I could talk to you like all day, Paul. I'd drive you nutty. I just find it fascinating. It's like an indulgence for me. I need to ask what leadership lessons that you would say that you've learned from the experience at Fix Radio and in your career that you could impart on others in any industry they're working in.
I think the most important leadership lesson, and it applies to me now as it applied to me then and Louis as he came in, is you have to be persistent. You cannot let something die. You've got to keep going. And that is I'm involved in another radio project and we're going through not the best of times at the moment. But one of the things that keeps me going is the fact that you have to keep going in order to achieve something. So I think both Louis and I learned that. You've got to be persistent. For me, because of my experience, which I described earlier in the first few weeks of or months of Invicta Radio, offer to work for free. I know it's very unfashionable and it doesn't always fit in with your personal circumstances, but people, because of the current pressures that radio stations are under these days, people like that and will give you an opportunity. And I think that's an important thing. And the final thing I would say is that, know how to do the job that you're asking them to do. Also, set goals, but don't meddle in the way that they get to those goals. So you say, I want this to happen. I want you to set up this Instagram channel. And of course you could say, well, I want you to do this, that, and the other in order to achieve it. But you should let them try and achieve that goal on their own terms or using their ideas before you weigh in with yours.
Give them autonomy.
Yes, give them autonomy. There are instances where you do need to micromanage, but only after other things have not worked. And you should always try and give people the freedom to use their own skills to get where you want them to be. But I think out of all of those three things, persistence and is the most important thing of all. You've got to keep going. And if you get knocked down, you've got to get up again. And it's all that kind of motivational cliche stuff that you read online and stuff like that.
It's true.
It is true. Absolutely true.
Right, Paul, I'm going to put you to the test now. It's your time. And
I'm nervous about this because these are the kind of competitions that I usually devise myself. And usually I'm not very good at it at all.
Well, I do accept bribes. So, make your offer now. Basically, I'm going to ask you to pick a card number one, card number two, or card number three.
Three.
Card number three. So your topic for today is music. So this is probably quite good for you.
Dare I say yes?
You can say yes now. Get it out of your system.
Yes.
Just get it all out. Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm going to ask you lots of random questions about music. Uh-huh. Now, you can answer any way you like, but you cannot say yes or no.
Okay.
Now, to make it even harder, we're going to have some really intense music in the background that puts the pressure on you.
Okay.
And your challenge is to last 60 seconds without slipping up.
Okay, I'm not going to make that. We'll see that. Yes. I probably won't even make 6 seconds.
I love the confidence. It's amazing.
Okay, go on. Let's have a go.
If you hear the gong, that means you said yes, no, or a variance of yes, no, and you're out.
Hang on, a variance of yes or no?
Well, if you say yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I've had people try and get away with that before. I said, yeah, not yes. Right, this is the moment Paul's been waiting for. He's been looking forward to it all day. It's the yes-no game. Paul, do not say yes or no. Do you listen to music every day?
I don't.
What's the first album or song you remember listening to?
My Boy Lollipop by an artist called Millie.
What was the last live concert or music festival you attended?
That's a good question. And I think the answer is, it was Squeeze at the Brighton Centre.
Have you ever met a pop star?
Many.
Do you play any musical instruments?
I don't.
Oasis or Blur?
Oasis.
Did you say Oasis?
Oasis.
Is music better loud or quiet?
Loud.
When in the car alone, do you sing along like you are on stage?
Definitely.
Do you get embarrassed if people look at you?
Definitely. Is that it?
You did it, yeah. 60
did
seconds.
I make it? Oh, wow.
You did. You were really good.
Wow.
From the start, I thought you were a little bit nervous. You're not going to do it. And then when you went into it, you just went into radio mode and you were just...
I can't believe I've done that.
Well, there you go. That was first attempt as well. Like, we don't do any cheating.
What do I get? What's my prize?
Your prize is your self-pride, and I'll pop it in the post for you this afternoon, and it's on its way to you as we speak.
Fabulous. We could all do with some more self-pride.
I should do prizes with you. I should do, like, Ever Selling Podcast mugs. That'd be quite good, wouldn't it?
Yes, I would like one, yes. Yeah. Yes, we've got, talking of that, we've got a fix. One thing that's on my shelf, I know this is not video, so I won't show you, but one thing that I'm really proud of that we've got, well, two things, actually. The first is we do Fix Radio tape measures, which are branded, so people can take them out to the building
site. That's so cool.
And the other thing we've got, and I will show you this, and I know that the people who are listening may not be able to see it, but it's this. It's a Fix Radio black credit card.
Wow.
Just like the American Express cards, and it's branded up. And we give those to all our presenters and producers with a limited amount of credit.
I was going to say, do they come loaded?
The idea is that when they're out at events and stuff like that, they can treat people to coffee and beers. And,
what a great idea.
Maybe lunch or something like that, just to say thank you from Fix Radio. And it's very, very popular. Our presenters love it, you know. Going to trade shows and stuff, being able to buy a round of drinks for people. And we love it. So, yeah, that's a fairly new innovation that we've come up with.
I love that. I won't be doing that for me because it's only me. So I love my own credit cards, spend my own money. I found the world of QR codes, and I have a QR code on the back. I don't know if you can see it on there. And
I was in
the queue in Costa the other day. And I just turn around like you do when you turn around. The lady was behind me with her phone held up behind me like that. And she was scanning my QR. She was so embarrassed. I was like, no, carry on. It's fine.
Brilliant.
It's absolutely brilliant. Right. Before I let you go, Paul, just tell me where can people go to? Well, you got your book coming up. What's your new book called?
It's the second edition. About 2 years ago, we wrote a book called Essential Media Law, which is meant for people who work for radio and do podcasts or just use social media to give them, you know, an overview of libel, contempt, privacy, copyright, stuff like that. And after 2 years, it was getting a little bit out of date. So we've rewritten it just to put some more examples in and also to update it generally. And that's being published this week. And you can, although it's not available, well, it is available now, but we haven't publicised it. If you go to amazon.co.uk and just do a search for Essential Media Law, you can buy it either as a paperback or as a Kindle download. And as I say, the foreword has been written by Nick Ferrari,
of LBC.
Amazing. I'll pop a link down in the show notes below so people can just click away and grab themselves a must-have book. Where can people go to learn more about you and Fix Radio?
I'm not sure about me, but...
you've got a website. I've seen it.
Yeah, it needs a bit of a revamp. It's paulchantler.com. I'm also on Twitter, which is at Paul Chantler. And Fix Radio has, I think, an excellent website called fixradio.co.uk, which has lots of news, not only about the radio station, but also about the construction industry generally.
Yeah, it's a great resource. I'll pop links to all of those down below. So if you want to check any of those out, just give it a click. Well, thank you very much, Paul. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today.
Not at all. Not at all. Thank you very much indeed for hosting and for asking some really good questions.
It's been a pleasure. The conversation with Paul today really does shed some light on several key aspects of entrepreneurship and business leadership, showcasing valuable insights and lessons learned. So let's get into some key takeaways. Station founder and visionary Louis Timpany's recognition of a niche market opportunity for a radio station targeted at builders highlights the importance of market research and identifying unserved or untapped niche markets. It was an opportunity that he spotted through everyday life, and this identification inspired Think Big behaviours that led to the realisation of Fix Radio. Being brave and taking the opportunity to put his vision in front of Paul at the first opportunity was a calculated risk, but offered a big reward. Paul's extensive network and connections within the radio industry played a critical role in facilitating the launch of Fix Radio. Leveraging existing relationships can open doors, provide valuable insights, and accelerate the process of building partnerships and securing funding. This really does demonstrate the importance of investing time and effort in networking, building relationships, and earning trust. Launching a new venture, especially in a competitive industry like radio, requires persistence and resilience. Despite facing challenges and setbacks, Paul and Louis remained committed to their vision and persevered through the obstacles they encountered. Having that drive for excellence is a trait that can be seen in almost all successful people. Anything is possible if you put your mind to it and you work hard. Paul emphasized the importance of authenticity in connecting with the target audience or customers. By recognizing the need to resonate with builders, they demonstrated agility by shifting towards hiring authentic voices from the construction industry, contributing to the station's success. This underscores the significance of adapting strategies based on feedback and market dynamics. While Paul initially had a more modest vision for Fix Radio, Louis had a grander vision for the station's potential. Having ambitious goals and a clear vision can drive innovation, expansion, and long-term growth. The meeting of these two minds and complementary skill sets are what really brought this vision to life. This showcases perfectly the value of diversity, perspective, and a common desire for success. Paul and Louis recognised the authenticity and expertise of raw talents like the Bald Builders Brad and Sam, despite their lack of radio and industry experience. They saw their strengths, capitalising on their humour and knowledge of the building trade. Then, they provided them with production support and training to bridge the gaps required to make them more radio-friendly. This so exemplifies effective leadership, recognising potential, nurturing talent and empowering individuals to grow and excel in their roles. This is just brilliant and it's so good to hear, especially in an industry like radio where it is so competitive. Funding a new venture can be a real headache. Getting sponsorship and advertisers on board requires effort, persistence, relationship building and salesmanship. Paul acknowledged the role of Louis and the sales team in securing sponsorships by building relationships with advertisers over time, building trust and mutual partnerships. The team built a trusted brand that appealed to advertisers. They offered a targeted advertising solution, demonstrating the value of reaching a specific audience without wastage. Paul and Louis persisted with their vision, proving skeptics wrong and achieving profitability in an incredibly competitive and challenging market to penetrate. This demonstrates the power of vision, persistence, and belief in your ideas. Overall, my time with Paul today highlights the importance of recognizing and nurturing talent, understanding your customer, building strong relationships with stakeholders, networking, and staying adaptable and persistent in the face of challenges. That brings us to an end of this episode of the Ever Selene podcast. Thanks so much to Paul for joining us today and giving us a real insight into the challenges and the success that has been seen through Fix Radio's growth, and such a massive growth in such a small amount of time in such a difficult industry. Inspiration and lessons for us all there. If you like the sound of today's show and you would like to hear more, please subscribe and follow the Ever Selene podcast on your favourite platform or at everselene.com, where you'll also find episodes that you might have missed, and you can also find about the services that we have on offer here as well. If you can, please take a moment to like and review the Ever Selene podcast on the platform that you listen to. That's it. I'll see you on the next episode, and don't forget, Ever Selene, you know it makes sense. The Ever Selene podcast is researched, produced, and recorded by Matt Sims. Visit everselene.com to find out more.